Okay, good morning. Yeah, my name's Graham Bradley. I've been with the Department of Environmental Conservation for almost 2.5 years now. My background is as a hydrogeologist in groundwater, looking at working with consultancy, cleaning up contaminated sites, but also teaching hydrogeology and engineering geology and those kind of subjects at SUNY Oswego. So it's been interesting working with the DEC in the sort of domestic wastewater regulation and getting to know much more about the near surface environment, the soils. But today, I'm going to be giving an overview of septic systems. I know for a number of you here, this is going to be basic stuff, but I just want to make sure we're all on the same page for the rest of the day, and perhaps get rid of a few potential misconceptions that one or two people can have about septic systems. So, where are my points? So, what I'm going to talk about, come over to this side, so I can point this at the computer. What are the basic components of a septic system? Come on. Oh, no, it's not that.
So it wasn't just me.
It's not just you. There we go. Why care about wastewater treatment? And Eric's already, thank you for the good introduction there. We've got a little bit of overlap, but that doesn't do any harm. How do wastewater treatment systems work? Come on. Am I going to do better? What are the different types of wastewater treatment systems? I'll talk a little bit about the alternatives to your standard septic tank and leach field, which can be particularly useful to know about for lake shore camps. How do you know a wastewater system has failed? Good to know. Sometimes it's obvious, sometimes perhaps not so obvious. And for homeowners, who can design a wastewater treatment system? What do you do if it has failed? And when might you need a new wastewater system? And pay attention, because if we have time, it's awkward at the end. Okay. But we'll see how that goes. Oh, that was a clue. So here's a question for you. Where does the treatment start? Wastewater treatment, where does it start? Anyone see what was on there? In your gut, exactly. Yeah. So you think about it, but one of our concerns is too many nutrients going into the lake. Why is there too many nutrients going to the lake? Because of the food we've eaten. One of the reasons that we need those nutrients to make our bodies. Also, we've already heard about pathogens, those microbes that can cause illnesses. They can start off in here as well. So you may look around and see, I don't know, 50, 60, 70 attendees. I look around and I see 60 anaerobic treatment systems. Okay. The next stage, of course, I'll figure out where to point this, is flush it down the toilet, into, or turn your sink on, whatever you're cleaning, whatever's going down the drain, that goes into the septic tank. So the septic tank, these bugs continue working. It's almost like an extension of what's going on in your gut. They keep going, they keep digesting that material, and they quickly use up all the oxygen in there. So that becomes what we know as an anaerobic environment, no air. So only those bugs that can survive without air live in there. Now that's from the septic tank. The next component, I'm going to talk a little bit more about septic tanks in a moment. The next component, the water, we use a lot more water than we flush solids into the septic tank. And Eric's already mentioned about getting the solids pumped out of your septic tank, you know, maybe 3 years, depending on how many people live in the house and how much you're using it.
but
we can't get all of that unless you're using a holding tank like Eric, which is very expensive, and the state only allows it under certain circumstances. Nobody would want a way of getting rid of that water, but that water is now contaminated with potential pathogens that have been living in that septic tank. So we send that water out to the leach field. Now this is perhaps the most important part of the treatment process. We're sending it out from an environment where there's no air and putting it into the soil here. One of the first misconceptions people have is that the purpose of the leach field is just to disperse the water. It's just to get rid of it. It's also a treatment system. That treatment is taking place in this unsaturated soil under your leach field. The bugs that need air can treat that wastewater a lot more effectively. They can digest that material and fight those potential pathogens a lot more effectively than the bugs that are in the anaerobic environment. Just like us, they've got more oxygen, they're more energetic. Okay, so we want to make sure that the soil is unsaturated, it's got air in it underneath our leach field. Okay, so those are the main components. So the next question is, and I was glad that Eric was thinking along the same lines as me, why do we care? It's just going into the ground, right? Out of sight, out of mind. That was the attitude for quite a while. We want to make sure it's treated. Here we have the leach field, here we have what I call effluent, that dirty water going down through this unsaturated soil, eventually reaching the saturated soil below the water table. The water table is this surface here. So that can get down into the aquifer and potentially, if it's flowing in the wrong direction, into our well. This is showing a dug well, but it may also make it down into the bedrock and into a bedrock well. So if we don't have adequate treatment here, and this is traveling too fast, or that distance is not far enough, potentially those pathogens are going to end up ingesting those pathogens. So the regulations in Vermont very much focus on human health pathogens. We've mentioned that term a few times already. Bacteria, viruses, and other microorganisms that can cause disease. That's what we mean by that. And here's an example of a few of them. I just pulled this off last night. Some different types of organisms. Microscopic, you wouldn't be able to see any of these with the naked eye. It's even difficult with an optical microscope sometimes. There's bacteria, there's viruses, and there's protozoan, single-celled organisms as well, all of which can cause sickness and diarrhea and potentially worse. So that's what we don't want to get into our drinking water from our septic systems. The other focus of the Vermont rules is the environment. We care about the environment as well. So here's a slightly different picture. Here's our leach field. That effluent is going down, it's hitting the water table here. It's getting into the aquifer, and it's traveling with the groundwater, and here it's entering the lake. So as Eric's already talked about, and we're concerned about some of those pathogens I've just showed you getting into the lake, but also a possible excess of nutrients as well. Potentially an excess of phosphorus. I've mentioned nitrogen as well there, another nutrient. For coastal areas, we tend to be more concerned about nitrogen. Coastal, in the sea, there's a lot of phosphorus around. Because it's nitrogen that limits the amount of biological activity and algal growth. In freshwater environments, the limiting nutrient is phosphorus. The biology doesn't have enough phosphorus. So if we add more phosphorus, that can create these algal blooms. So that's why we're particularly concerned with phosphorus in Vermont. And here's an example of an algal bloom from Lake Karma. I don't say a lot about this. I'm not a lake specialist, but I just want to put this into context and make sure we're all on the same page. So here's a healthy lake, what we call oligotrophic. It's got just enough nutrients for the fish and the sort of macrobiota to flourish. And I think it's worth saying that phosphorus is a essential element. It's not necessarily a bad thing. Well, we wouldn't be here without phosphorus. It's in our DNA, literally. The DNA wouldn't work without phosphorus. It's in the molecule that gives us energy. I wouldn't be able to lift my arm without the ATP that allows me to do that, without the molecule that includes phosphorus that allows us to do that. So it's not a poison. It's an essential element for life. But you get too much of it, you can have too much of a good thing, and you can have too much life. It allows the algae to bloom. The cyanobacteria is photosynthesizing bacteria to bloom. You know, if they haven't got phosphorus, they can't grow. If they've got too much, they can grow too much. They can start using up the oxygen in the lake. And as we've heard, under certain conditions, cyanobacteria can also produce toxins, which can be a problem. They'll die off, fall to the bottom of the lake, start decomposing. That also uses up oxygen. So then we end up with the fish dying, with the macrobiota dying here, no oxygen. So this can lead to what we call eutrophication or eutrophic conditions, which we want to try and avoid. Now I want to put that into context. Eric's talked about sources of phosphorus in Lake Champlain. I pulled off a chart here from Lake Carmine, where again they've been looking at what's the maximum amount of phosphorus that the lake can sustain and remain healthy. So here is the total phosphorus estimated going into the lake, and these are estimates based on what we know about stream sampling and the different land uses. Again, agricultural land historically has been a large source of phosphorus, and then developed land also. And then this box here has been expanded, and here we have, this is separated out septic. Lake Carmi is surrounded by, I'm not sure, maybe 60-70% of the lake by camps, and with each with their own individual septic systems. The best estimate we have at the moment is it's probably only about 1% contribution of phosphorus going into Lake Carmine. That could be a little bit higher. I think if every camp had a straight pipe going in the lake, it's been estimated maybe up to 5%. There's some good things about phosphorus. It tends to precipitate in the soil, and it tends to bind to the soil. And I'm actually doing some work this summer sampling the groundwater. So there is ongoing research to try and confirm if that's right, or if it's a little bit higher, and so we're looking at that. So I just want to put that into context when we're talking about phosphorus. As Eric says, you know, we need to reduce that amount of phosphorus going into the lake. It was about 30-something percent you suggested for Lake Champlain. I think it's something similar for Lake Carmine, I forget exactly. So we're all responsible for trying to reduce that amount of phosphorus. But in terms of Vermont regulations, in terms of the Vermont regulations, we are focused on pathogens. We are focused on treating that groundwater, to prevent this happening. Okay, stop us getting ill. I looked around for what was the least offensive icons to show, but to get the point home. Okay. So how are we doing for time? A little time, I can slow down. If you've got questions as we go along, you know, any really burning questions, or I haven't explained something well, please do stick your hand up and I'm prepared to answer those. Do you have a question? Yeah.
I really like to know, I suppose, why where you have the groundwater or the septic, you know, the bore and something on there. And I don't have any thoughts or ideas about how, as we have increased precipitation here for climate change, how that water is going up, how that might be impacting the effectiveness.
Yeah, so the question was, is climate change and potentially increasing water tables influencing septic design in Vermont? My gut reaction would, I'm a scientist, I look for data. I don't have any data on that, so it would just be hypotheses. I'd be surprised if we've reached the point where that is influencing kind of septic design. Yeah. I did actually do research in Uganda, this is a bit of an aside, in Africa. And it's interesting, in Africa, we do expect climate change to influence the water table, because there, they have a very deep water table, and when it rains, and the water's infiltrating the soil and going down, it tends to evaporate before it's even reached the water table. With climate change, it's going to be causing evaporation of surface water. Surface water is going to be more problematic in large parts of equatorial Africa, but climate change is probably going to cause more dramatic rainfall events, more intense rainfall events. And so actually, it's more likely that that rainwater will reach the aquifer and recharge the aquifer. So we may see a change of emphasis from surface water to groundwater as a resource in parts of Africa. So that's a bit of a side. In Vermont, I don't think it's yet an issue, but I'm not entirely familiar if anyone's done research on that. Okay, back to septic systems and how we design them. We have to figure out how big it should be. So we've got to figure out how much water and poop we're putting down there.
Do you want?
We're going to be putting a lot more water down there. That's what carries the rest with it, and our drains using and washing and showers. So, how do you think we figure out how much water we use per day in a house? The answer is actually missing from this diagram. People think about it and think, well, it's when I turn the tap on, right? Well, really it's about how many people are living in the house. And so we base it on the number of bedrooms. We call it the design flow, and as I said, we base it on the number of bedrooms. Because you could have, you could have five bathrooms, but if you've only got two bedrooms, presumably you're probably only gonna have a maximum of four people in the house. And we base it on some sort of national statistics on the amount of water used per person. In Vermont, we use 70 gallons per person per day. I happened to be looking at something in the New Hampshire rules a couple of weeks ago. They're 75 gallons per person per day. So we're all using similar numbers. And while I've got it on that topic, and I know there are a few designers in the room, one thing to think about is even if we use less and less water, we become more and more efficient, we're still eating the same. Okay, so we're probably still putting as much organic matter into our septic tanks, which means the strength of wastewater is going to get higher. The amount of biological material per gallon is going to get higher. So we probably won't be able to reduce the size of our yeast, our leach fields, much more, even if we are able to bring down that amount of water. We bring down the amount of water we use, we're putting in higher strength. Just a note for the designers among you, something to think about. And then based on the number of bedrooms, as I've said, we assume that there's two people in the first three bedrooms. So one question we often get asked is, yeah, but I'm the only person living in this house, and it's a three-bedroom house. The permits, which Ernie will talk about later, are issued for the property. Okay, you might sell that house. It may have been a widow or widower who's been living there for the last 20 years in a four-bedroom house. They'll sell it. A large family moves in. We assume we base the rules on the property, not the person. Okay, the permits run with the property, not with the person. And then if you have additional bedrooms beyond three bedrooms, if you want, you can design that assuming there's just one person per bedroom. If you anticipate more people, then you may wish to design it for more. So just a quick example for a five-bedroom house. First three bedrooms, two people times 70. The next two bedrooms will assume one person times 70. It's 560 gallons per day. So that's how we figure out how much water. So that's the basics. For different types of businesses, we have different ways of calculating design flows as well. Come on. So moving downstream. I'm really not sure where the best place to point this is. So we've gone from the house to the septic tank. And the primary purpose of the septic tank is just to separate out those liquids and solids. So some people get another potential misconception is that most treatment occurs in the septic tank. Some treatment occurs in there. Those anaerobic bugs, remember there's not a lot of oxygen in here, they can digest and dissolve some of that solid material. So there is treatment occurring, it's just it's very slow. They don't have much energy. There's no oxygen in there. The primary purpose is to separate it out. In order for it to separate it out, we want that wastewater with the solids in it to be there for at least 2 days. So we need to make sure it's big enough. So a single family home, I'm forgetting what the actual size is, you know, a 3-4 bedroom home, it wants to be at least 1,000 gallons. So you've got at least 2 days residence time in there. And then we call the floating solids, we get this scum layer, the sinking solids, we get this sludge layer on the bottom, and depending on how many people are living there, how big the tank is, your lifestyle, it may be 2 years that you need to get those pumped out, it may be longer, 4 or 5 years potentially. But the wastewater, we're putting a lot more wastewater through here with those pathogens in it, with dissolved nutrients, dissolved organic matter, that then goes out to the leach field. In Vermont, we require a filter on here just to prevent suspended solids, small particles getting in and clogging the leach field. Now, so, we're out in the leach field now, we're moving downstream. Here's a trench system, and the way the rules are written, the most basic design, you can have a trench or you can have a bed, I'll have a picture of one of those in a moment. You can design it entirely prescriptively based on these numbers here. So here we have our stone, leach field stone in here. If this is a gravity system, you've got a 4-inch pipe here. It's draining out into the trench or the bed. And here's our effluent coming out bottom down to our face of our trench, our infiltrated surface here. And we don't want that any more than 3 feet below the surface. Anyone know why that doesn't need to be 3 feet? We don't want that more than 3 feet below the surface.
Air.
I think I'm looking at designs. Air, I think someone mentioned air. We want the air to get down beneath the trench here, because this is where the treatment's going to be occurring. And we want at least 3 feet from the bottom of the trench or the bed to the highest water level, our spring water table here, seasonal high water table. Because this is where we want the aerobic bugs to get to work and fight those pathogens and digest that material. We also require 4 feet to bedrock as well. So I'm not going to get into details of design, but just, come on. So we want that 3 feet, no more than 3 feet, rather, it can be shallower. It'd be better if it was shallower. We want air to get down there, oxygen to get down there. And then it's that area beneath the trench or the bed where the treatment occurs. You've got the air, you've got the good bacteria, we've got the effluent. We're feeding them. That's what we're doing. We're feeding the bugs that are already there. They're already there. They're in the soil. Some of them are in the effluent. As long as they've got the air and they've got the food, they're going to multiply. And they're going to do that treatment for us. So hopefully I remember. Oh, yeah. And then we want to be above the bedrock as well. There's two issues with bedrock. Either it's low permeability, either the water can't get through it very easily, or potentially there's fractures and cracks in it, and it can travel very quickly. Okay, we don't want those fractures and cracks connected to our well. So we want to keep that distance from the bedrock as well. Oh, okay. So just so you know, oh, there's another one there. I'm forgetting what's on this slide. Over time, where this effluent is entering the soil here, we get a buildup. What we call the biomat. You imagine this is where that food is going into the soil. That's where the bugs are congregating. Oh, food coming out of the bottom of the trench. Also, some of those particles get stuck there as well. This can be a good thing and a bad thing. In the short term, it's a relatively good thing. It slows down the movement of that water. It makes sure our effluent is spread out all along the bottom of the trench, if it's a gravity system. But over time, it can become thicker and thicker and more difficult to get that effluent through. So what do you think will happen over time? It starts to back up, it starts to fill up. You know, if you've got a problem, when you get your septic tank pumped, and it's worth being around when they do that, have a look, if you've got an older system, see if it's flowing back from the leach field. That means this water level is above the pipe. Depends on how you've got it set up. Something to watch out for. And of course, if you leave it, it'll eventually plug it completely and you can get surfacing effluent. That's why leach fields have a lifespan. Depends how it's been used, maybe 20, 30 years. Okay. That's one sign that it's failed. Okay, it starts to back up. Okay, how do we know where the water table is? Very quick. Remember, really our goal is to know where the bugs live. thank goodness nature has provided us with an easy way of figuring this out. We don't have to put holes in the ground and wait for the highest water table. We can look at the soils, and if you employ a designer, this is the first thing they'll do, one of the first things they'll do, come and have a look at the soils. And what they're looking for is rust, essentially. Where is the red-brown soil? And where is the grey soil? Can you see the difference in colours? It's not always as easy as this, sometimes it's a little more difficult. Here, there's been oxygen in the soil. The iron has formed this rusty coating on the soil particles. Down here, it's been below the water table at some point. There has not been a lot of oxygen around. Chemists would say it's been reduced, forms a different kind of iron oxide that's soluble, that can dissolve away. So this is the real color of the soil particles down here. It's gray, it's actually mainly quartz. This gray color. This has got rust coatings on it. So that's what we're looking for. Oh, come on, I went the wrong way. So in order to figure out where that seasonal high water table is. You might be able to stand, this is where those aerobic bugs can live. So now you can see what we sometimes call these soil-based wastewater systems. So it really is the soil can be the key. I like to think of it this way, you and your designer, really a microbe farmers. It's the bugs that are doing the work for us. We're creating that environment below the leach field for the bugs to do our work for us. This is actually an organic farming book telling you about the microbes in the soil. I like that, teeming with microbes. That's what we're doing. Bit of a play on words there. Okay, here's an example of a bed. So you've got more than one pipe. Here, it's wider. Bed, the stone beneath the pipe in a bed is 6 inches deep. In a trench, it can be up to 24 inches deep, if you've got the space underneath to allow treatment to occur. Okay, so some of you may be thinking, yeah, but I've got a tiny camp on a lakeside lot. How am I going to fit some of these things in if I need a new system? We'll get on to that. What if I don't have 3 feet to the water table? What if you don't have that much of unsaturated soil? Well, one option would be to go up. Create that 3 feet of saturated soil, unsaturated soil. So we're seeing more and more leach fields in mounds, mound systems in Vermont. So here the water table, you know, this may be 2 feet, and maybe just 1 foot to the water table underneath. So this time, when we put the effluent in this leach field in the mounds, much of that treatment is going to take place in this mound sand here. It doesn't matter if the sands come from somewhere else. There's bugs that can treat that already in the effluent. They can migrate up from the soil. You know, build it and they will come. We've heard that somewhere before. It only needs a few of them. If you feed them, they're going to multiply. And they're going to treat the water for us. Okay, so that's one potential solution. Sometimes there's not enough space on a lakeside lot to do that. Another option, if you just don't have that space for the side slopes, might be to put something like this in, a bottomless sand filter, we call it. It works on the same kind of principles, except same kind of principles, but we can cut off those side slopes and put in these pressure treated timbers to contain that sand, that man sand. So here's our pipe. This is now by the way, mound systems, bottomless sand filters are generally pressurized as well. They're going to be, so the standard trenches and beds I showed you had a 4-inch pipe, and that could drain by gravity in there. And we were actually relying on the biomat to develop and make sure that effluent was spread out evenly. These kind of systems, we use a smaller pipe, and it's pressurized, so you'll need a pump. And so because it's pressurized, it's already spreading out the effluent. That makes it more efficient, gives us better treatment. Imagine initially with a gravity system, it takes time to build up. So a lot of that effluent's going in at the start of the pipe, and it's only after it's matured that you're getting an efficient treatment and it's spread out throughout. So pressurized systems are generally better. Spread out that effluent and get better treatment. Okay, so this is one. I was giving this talk to realtors. I picked some of these photographs off the internet, and there's a couple of these slides I've chosen. Someone said, oh, that's my house. So, they gave me permission. So I always think there's more you could do with these things, make a little feng shui garden or something or whatever. I'm sure it could be invented. We need to be careful though about, we want the air to get in, remember. So you don't want to be putting anything that stops the air from getting in the top of that. The bugs are not going to thrive. They need the air and the food. Okay, so if we don't have enough soil and perhaps we don't have enough space, another option might be to provide pre-treatment. Okay, I've got a few examples. Vendors here, don't worry, I'm trying to select a number. So we need to try and reduce those pathogens and reduce the amount of biological material in that effluent before it goes into the ground. If we can do that, then we can start to reduce that depth to the water table, because we don't need as much treatment, pre-treated.